Hello, everyone, and welcome to Not Quite Hollywood, episode 45. I'm Jamie.
I'm Alex.
And Tim is not with us, unfortunately. This is actually the first time Alex and I have ever recorded together.
In the studio.
In our new studio, yeah. Our apartment. A little behind the scenes, Blue Yeti mics, you can suck a dick. Because we recorded this entire episode already a couple days ago. And I was going to edit today, the day before it goes up. And this fucking popping sound went through the entire track.
Rice Krispies.
Yeah, exactly. And it's happened to John before in other videos. And it's so frustrating because you have to redo the entire thing. There's no way to save the audio. So hoping this one sounds good. I'm really scared now. Thanks a lot. Let's start off with you, Alex. We have an interesting film here you've seen.
Yes.
You forget what it was?
Yeah. This week, I finally saw Hacksaw Ridge. It was my first Mel Gibson directorial effort that I've seen. I have yet to see Braveheart. I have not seen and have no interest in seeing Passion of the Christ. And I want to see Apocalypto. But I was thoroughly impressed with his directing ability despite his anti-Semitism. But yes, so I went into the film ready to hate it because I do not like Mel Gibson as a person. Just like I went into The Revenant ready to hate it. And I actually ended up liking it a lot. I was not bored at all. The first third, as most biopics go, is more of an intro and, you know, leading up to the big war scenes or whatever. But I was not bored at all. His relationships to Teresa Palmer's character was very intriguing. Like, I thought it would be, was a little bit Captain America-like in that he was, like, the weakest, the weaker one of the soldiers.
Right.
All that stuff. But it wasn't, like, didn't come off as cheesy to me. It was very interesting. Vince Vaughn, when he was in training camp, was great. I never thought I'd say Vince Vaughn did a great acting job, but he was, he was great. I really enjoyed him. The battle scenes were mind-blowing. And the sound mixing and the battle scenes, really, I think I'm going to change my Oscar predictions and say that Hacksaw Ridge is going to take the sound mixing Oscar. Although today we were at an Arrival's director's Q&A today. They showed a couple clips of Arrival and I was like, wow, this has great sound mixing too. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
But I still think, I think Hacksaw Ridge is going to take the sound mixing category.
I hope Arrival gets it because I love the sound design. You have to create these sounds. And like Denny was saying, they chose these two people because they worked in District 9 and they created all the language of the alien race.
Yeah, which that's another one of my favorite sci-fi films. Yeah.
And I didn't know that until we heard it tonight. I'm like, holy shit, that's amazing. There's also Sam Worthington in this film, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, he's always been kind of like the everyman, the proxy for the audience. He's never really had a good enough personality. Does he fare well in the same regard, or is he stand above that kind of typical Worthington performance?
Fair-minded.
He just seems like he doesn't have a lot of personality. I don't, nothing against the guy, but like with Avatar, he was literally an avatar for the audience.
Yeah.
It's like a video game character that doesn't have a lot of backstory. It's there for you to become that person.
I think he definitely had a lot more character. He had a lot more. He was basically above Vince Vaughn's character in the army. He was definitely angry at times. He was great in the battle scenes. He wasn't, I don't think, as good as Vince Vaughn. I feel like Mel Gibson just chose a bunch of, I don't want to say mediocre actors, but no actors that, you know, you look at a movie, you're like, wow, they're really good. Sam Worthington was pretty good. I think Vince Vaughn is by far the best in the movie.
Oh, wow. Yeah. He has a good eye then for taking these characters, these actors that are not necessarily standouts and giving them a chance to shine, which is cool.
Yeah. Andrew Garfield is up for an Oscar, but I don't know. He was just kind of Andrew Garfield to me, like Andrew Garfield with an accent.
Almost every movie he does is an Andrew Garfield with an accent. Yeah. Anything else about the film that you want to mention?
Definitely makes me want to go out and see more Mel Gibson movies for sure. I don't know why I thought that it wasn't going to be good because he's clearly has a great track record.
He's done it for a long time. Yeah. They wouldn't let him do any more if he's shitty.
Yeah, exactly. I guess I thought maybe a guy who gets drunk and rambles about other religions and, you know, gets caught on tape doing it wouldn't be a great director, but I guess I was wrong. He's pretty talented.
I've only seen The Passion of the Christ for his directorial efforts. It was a big movie in my northern Maine town because a lot of Catholics, which I've never understood the whole story of Jesus in that.
Neither have I.
Well, no, but in that he is a Jew and Catholics, I don't get that. Catholics are the ones that really persecuted him.
Uh-huh. Well, it's because,
what?
Oh, okay.
Like we're the bad guys in that story, the Catholics.
Oh, I always thought the Jews were like, we were the bad guys. What's his name?
Judah? Jesus.
No, but his 12th Not just about the apostle.
Oh, Judas.
Yes, which means Jew. He betrayed Jesus. And so that's why Jews are
seen Judaism. As yeah, I get it. That's terrible. Like, not that it was meant that way, but the Bible didn't have good, like, SEO, if you will, for screenplays. Like, you're not supposed to have two characters that sound so similar.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, no, Judas. No, you want to have, like, George. Frank. Or like Xerxes or something like that.
Yeah.
To be clear, we didn't talk about religion in the last version of this episode, so. It's too bad. I think we had some good stuff in there, but, you know, we definitely had a longer episode. This one's going to be a little shorter. Mm-hmm. Sorry, people. I got to edit tonight before I go to bed. And, I'm a nagging bitch right now. But speaking of nagging bitches.
I'm, like, trying to figure out how you're going to leave.
I just made up a shitty segue. Speaking of another J name, I think. It's the best one I got. Sad, but true. Now, this past weekend, we watched John Wick Chapter 2.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go in, I think I'd seen like one trailer maybe.
Okay.
The first one. And I didn't go in like with a lot of expectations. Like, it looked really, really fun. It ratcheted everything about the first film up. Obviously had more budget, but it ratcheted up the violence. The action was more like, I couldn't believe it. It was almost more choreographed. And I love the choreography of these two films because it feels more realistic, more natural, more chaotic than, you know, the first episode 1 of Star Wars. Like, it's like they're dancing. And that's one of the biggest gripes about that movie. But I'm looking at a Star Wars poster. That's why I said that. With John Wick, the two films, that feels very raw, very visceral, improvised. Like, John Wick is coming up with new ways to kill everybody in every scene.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? Like, especially when he's being, like, at one point, it's not really a spoiler, a couple of hitmen are after him. And so, like, it's really brilliant editing in this film. And I think we talked about it after the film, where it intercuts between different elements, like different scenes. Like, there's a couple, I think three hitmen at one point that are being intercut back to back to back. So it's not like, here's all of A, here's all of B, all of C, here's A, then a little bit of B, a little bit of C, back to B, back to A. And that felt more natural in terms of how energetic the fights were. It was a montage with when it was not really meant to be a montage. I think the editing process really brought that out. So it was pretty cool to look at it that way. And again, this is all from, we just talked to Denny talked about how the editing kind of, one of the shots in Arrival ended up becoming a montage because of they needed to put it all in there, but they didn't want to cut it out. So they made a montage.
And they made Forrest Whitaker an alien. Wow. I actually think I disagree a little bit. I love John Wick also. John Wick and John Wick Chapter 2.
So, okay.
But I never heard or thought of the Star Wars fight scenes as like dancing. I actually think of John Wick more as dancing, but not in a dancing bad way.
Yeah.
I would describe John Wick Chapter 2 as like strangely beautiful because it looks kind of like dancing. But I never thought of that being a bad thing.
Well, so I should take a step back. So there is something about any type of job in film. There is a seamless way to do it, and then there's a way that shows the artifice of it. Mm-hmm. And I think with like Episode 1, the reason I brought it up is because it felt so practiced.
Okay.
And it felt like, oh, we're pulling our punches because we have to make this next mark. Yeah. Whereas John Wick, it's like, feels like it's happening in real time. Like, okay, he's really fighting, shit's going down, and he's kind of thinking on the off the top of his head.
Yeah.
And he's improvising during the fight.
The only Star Wars prequel that I've seen since I was 14 years old is Episode 2.
Maybe you've never seen one?
No, I've seen those, but not since I was 14 and I love them. You okay. Know what I mean?
Well, 2 is the worst one out of the 3, I think.
Oh, really?
I would say, yeah. I think it's like 3 is the best one. 1's the second best, and 2 is just fucking sand, it gets everywhere. Like, that's, oh, fucking, one of the worst moments in film.
I haven't seen you in 14 years, but I can't stop thinking about it.
Yeah, it's like, you're creepy as fuck. You were a little kid, and she was, like, essentially the same age. Don't do this. This is gross.
You're just as beautiful as I imagined.
Oh, shut up.
14 years.
Now, this is pod racing.
And I slaughtered them like animals.
That was, like, the best scene of it, though. Like, he killed all those sand walkers. Sand, what do you call them? Sand people? Anyway, we digress. But John Wick 2, do you like the idea of you agree with the editing part?
I do, and I think we talked about it a little bit. I like the Marvel films, but the thing I don't like about them is that they cut their fight scenes like so fast and so quick. It's like almost hard to tell what's going on at some points.
Yeah.
Especially Doctor Strange, like they're making these portals and like, yeah, so much shit's going on. People are coming out of the walls and you're like, where are they coming from? And like with John Wick and the Raid and these new breeds of action films, it's much easier on the eyes and it's just like flowing. Like they can just do one take or they can just do one shot or two shots and have it be, or one edit and two edit, and just have it go through a whole room or a whole hallway of guys and just have it look great. That's a lot being said for the choreography. And I think that's why in Captain America Civil War, they brought on the directors of John Wick to help out with the stunts and the choreography.
They did?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so that the fight scenes would be more fluid. And
huh.
I criticized the tunnel scene in Civil War, but the airport scene is awesome. And I feel like that's because they were on set and helping them out.
Well, that benefited from the open area.
Yeah.
You know, even if it was all green screen, they still benefited from that ability to kind of have more room to work with.
Mm-hmm. So I think Marvel does know its weaknesses, but like, man, these fight scenes in John Wick, I wish every action movie could do this. I think it's so much more fun to watch than the fast cutting of Marvel.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think?
No, I get it. I get it. When I first had seen that, we'll get back to the John Wick 2 guys really quick. That was interesting. But when I first seen the I think the second Transformers was the first one in 3D, and it was a goddamn mess. Like, I got so lost, and I usually like don't.
The first Transformers?
The second one.
Okay, yeah, I agree.
Not that it was good, but there were so many, like, quick cuts, and 3 had some elements of that, but it was just like you couldn't, like, obviously they're all robots too, so it's really hard to follow like a blur of blue. How are you supposed to know that's Optimus? It could be this one. It's kind of gray, you know. It was just so chaotic that it was I just kind of gave up at one point in the theater until they started getting more stable shots. Like, all right, I'm just gonna pretend that this one guy's winning, that's good enough until I find out otherwise.
I saw that one time in theaters. I think yeah, it was like 15. Only thing I remember is Megan Fox running in slow motion in the desert.
I mean, that's all you need to remember, really. Yes. I mean, unless you want to hear Shia go, Bumblebee, Optimus. Here's a couple things, right? So with what you said about Civil War, that's awesome. I didn't know I appreciate that they actually know their flaws and try to amend them with bringing John Wick directors on. August, if you ever listen to this, which you don't, you never listen to them when you're on the fucking show, you dick. That's right, August. Try to listen to this, you fuck.
August, if you email us, we'll give you $5.
Oh, bring back the old inside joke there. Nice. Well, he complained about Civil War being flat. And it's true. Like, there was a video about it recently. I can't remember the name of the YouTuber. They showed how the old ones on film, like up until like Iron Man 2, I think all the films, Marvel films, were shot on film. And so they took more effort into the cinematography in a way. Then he complained about Civil War not really having much of a look. Like, he, rightfully so, I think, Batman versus Superman had a better cinematography style to it. But
I think that's just Zack Snyder's style.
Sure, but I think the DP did a good job.
Yeah.
But yeah, with Civil War, they appreciate that they're trying to fix things, and I definitely think that like Guardians looks more rich than, you know, maybe some of the other films in Phase 2 did at one point. And as for the CGI, so I did briefly mention that they had a lot of this green screen in Civil War, that whole, it's sad. I heard a set visit of that. The whole airport scene is just a big lot with a green screen background. What? It's sad. Yeah. And that reminds me of what Denny said about Arrival. Like, we have to talk about Arrival because it's so fresh in our minds. Denny said that he hates green screen. He hates it. And if he had to do a film like that, he would die. And I love him for that, for saying that, because I want to do the same thing, as much realistic stuff as possible. And he said it was even weird having all these special effects shots that he couldn't really see. He wasn't sitting next to the CGI guys, because they were in other countries or other states. The thing that resonated with me the most is, like, it blew me away, is that they built the whole interaction set, like the spaceship where they walk into that tunnel. That's all real. They waited until they had the right clouds coming over the mountains in Montana. That those were clouds are real. I couldn't believe that. Like, I thought that was CGI.
When they said that was real, I pictured them getting a fog machine, or some, like 100 of them,
like an industrial sized machine. I mean, I've heard of that, those kinds of mountains before, but I didn't know. I thought that was just fake. And it was just brilliant to make that work in this film. It's such an ominous vibe, especially when they showed the clip tonight where she first sees the obelisk. I keep saying obelisk. It's not obelisk.
What is that word from?
The obelisk is from 2001. It's more of like a rectangular shape. My friend Spencer, who I think does listen to the podcast still, gave me shit about this when I posted in my blog. It was called Obelisk. And he was like, that's not technically called an obelisk. Like, he actually went out of his way to comment on it. So thanks, Spencer. But anyway, so I appreciate that Denny and filmmakers try to use more practical. And that's what I love about John Wick, too, to bring it back to John Wick, is that they use the majority, everything they do is in camera. You know, the choreography is insane. The action is real. I mean, all the squibs and the, there's some, I could probably tell where there's some CGI. We'll just say there was a scene with a pencil.
Yes.
That's all we should say about that. And
it makes the Joker scene seem like preschool shit.
Yeah. Like Joker's like, my first pencil he wrote on, like he's carved on it. But no, so John Wick, yeah. John Wick's really fun. If you've seen the first one, you're going to love this one. It's definitely a little more violent than I thought it would be. It really kind of goes out of its way.
Yeah. I also think it's more visually stunning. Like we had this whole debate about how they did the climax of the movie. They did it in this like mirror room, and it's like a self-reflective place, and there's mirrors all around him, and he's fighting these guys, and like 2/3 of the way through the scene, I'm like, wait, where's the camera? Because like, we're surrounded by mirrors. Like, how are they blocking the camera? So we had this whole debate about whether they took it out in post, or whether they had a two-way mirror in front of the lens, or what it was. And I think it's more visually stunning than the other one. But my one critique of it is I didn't like the more complicated story. I liked the simpler, like,
sure,
getting revenge for my dog,
yeah,
storyline, rather than trying to make it about a spy syndicate. But saying that, I think you don't go into John Wick for the story. I think you go in for the stunts, for the everything else. So I got what I went in for.
Yeah, sure. And, yeah, and the majority of action films like that are not really for story. I think it's the Keanu Reeves trilogyism. It's a disease, because the first Matrix was perfect, and then they made a sequel. I think, knowing full well they're making a trilogy, I think that's what they're going to do with John Wick 2. Yeah. It made a lot of money. The second one made a lot of money. I mean, more than I expected it to. It's critically received pretty well. But, I mean, they're definitely setting up for a third movie.
Oh, for sure.
Whether or not it happens is immaterial. I think it's going to happen, but I really do think that they were setting it up, and that's why they had to kind of give more story in this one to build up. It's like almost like an Empire kind of thing, where they have to build up to the Jedi.
What I think would be great is if they did Liam Neeson as the villain in 3 and had it almost be like Taken versus John Wick.
Oh, okay.
Like, not the same character, honestly, but like, yeah, you know, have them fight. Why don't you just give me a gun?
I have seen the movie once. I don't remember what the hell happened. I know his daughter got taken, and then his wife got taken, or was it? I don't know. I grew up with so many action movies as a kid that it's funny that they're still a part of my life. And even in an ancillary way, I don't necessarily seek them out. But like these will, this kind of definitely gets me excited. But most of the action films nowadays aren't like this. This is such an old school kind of action. You know, it's mostly superheroes now.
Yeah, I totally agree. I would say the superhero movies, the Tom Cruise, you know, like that, I guess it's like, I guess they're action movies, but like John Wick is like true action movies now. Like, yeah, for sure.
But really quickly, before we end this episode, it's definitely a short one, as I mentioned before, but we got to talk about my 52 pickup. And for number 6, I watched Little Monsters. Now, Alex, you had never seen this film before?
No.
So Little Monsters is a 1989 release. It stars Fred Savage, who is at the height of his popularity. He just finished Princess Bride a couple of years ago. He was in the Wonder Years, the second year of the Wonder Years. So he was definitely in the limelight. Mole, 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 mole. Like, that's the same guy. Do you know, ever see Austin Powers 3?
Not the third one.
No? Damn, man. That's pretty funny. It's a good time. Anyway.
Is that the gold member one?
Yes. Yeah. He's in there, a small role. It's really fun. So this film is about a kid who is kind of an outsider, doesn't have a lot of friends. His parents are constantly fighting. They're heading towards a divorce. It actually is mentioned in the film. Him and his brother, who is played by his real brother, Ben Savage, who is Corey Matthews from Boy Meets World.
That's right. That blew my mind.
Yeah. This is like about 4 or 5 years before he started Boy Meets World, so he's super young then. And
R.I.P. Girl Meets World.
It got canceled? Oh, well, sorry. I haven't seen Girl Meets World yet, but I have to watch it now. So anyway, Little Monsters is really interesting because a lot of people look at it as inspiration or as potential farming material for the Pixar film Monsters, Inc. because it is a very similar plot. This kid named Brian, played by Savage, finds out there are monsters in his brother's room. So he decides to switch rooms for a night to prove there's no monsters. And he sees it. And then the next night he stays there again. He captures the monster. It's played by Howie Mandel. And it ends up becoming this insane like story where he goes under the bed, which is like a magical portal of different tunnels to different every kid's room in America and probably the world. And if you stay there overnight, you turn to a monster forever. That's what all these monsters are. Kids who essentially let their inhibitions go and left their parents, left everybody, and got to be mischievous for the entire lives. And yeah, the film is more dirty and darker than I thought it was as a kid. And I even rewatched it in 2010, and I couldn't remember a damn thing about it. But it's a really interesting film. It made barely any money at all. It didn't even make $800,000 for the entire run. Not that it was a long run. But anyway, point is, it's a really interesting movie. I definitely recommend it to anyone who hasn't seen it in a long time. because you'll be surprised how crazy it is. But also people have never seen it, especially you, Alex. Somebody who kind of, you were born like 90?
93.
Holy fuck. So you don't even know.
Today.
Yeah. Well, as we're recording, yeah.
24
it's,
years
it's,
ago.
It's today. Alex's birthday.
So I have an interesting observation. What year did this come out?
89.
What year did Mouse Hunt come out?
97.
Well, that's the one that you were going to watch next week, right?
Yep.
And doesn't that have similarities to Ratatouille? And this one has similarities to Monsters, Inc.? I feel like they're watching the same movies you are, Pixar.
Well, it's just really random that they were back-to-back like that. Like, I did not plan that at all. Like, I found a lot of weird connections between all these films that I'd never found out before. I never thought of. Like, the writers for this film went on to write, like, a crazy amount of films. So, these writers wrote, it's just bizarre how all these connections, Ted Elliott and Terry Rossio, wrote my other film recently, Small Soldiers. And then they wrote Shrek, Deja Vu.
Oh.
The first four Pirates of the Caribbean. Oh, and Aladdin.
Wait, so, they wrote the first four Pirates?
Yeah.
They had the same writers for the fourth one?
I think that was just a story credit, though.
Oh, okay.
And then somebody else rewrote it. They've been rewritten a couple times, but not often. Anyway, yeah, so that's really interesting. I just think it's cool that all these connections are coming out of nowhere. But, of course, that's how the human mind works. You find connections and random stuff. Yeah, so anyway, that was my 52 pickup. I recommend it highly. You can rent it on Amazon Prime Video or... I think iTunes. I always use this website called canistream.it. Can I stream it? Because it'll tell you. It's not always accurate, though. Can't find it there. Go for one of your normal streaming services. You'll be able to find it. But yeah, that's all I have for that. Stay tuned for next week. We'll be talking some topics. Follow us on Facebook. We are at Not Quite Hollywood. We are on Twitter, NQHPod. And if you have any long-form questions, or apparently if you still want $5, Alex is holding up that offer from
August. Only for August, though.
Only yes. for August, if yeah. he ever listens to this, which,
yeah.
Spencer, don't cheat and tell him about it during trivia, but you got to just, like, let him come across this one day, like, years later, because that was a running gag August had for a long time. But if you want to email us about questions or talk about any of these films, we're at notquitepod@gmail.com. Of course, this post here on guyinthewire.com, that's my blog. I talk about film, some music, some TV, some cancer. Yeah, you heard me. And then, of course, Alex here.
I have a blog, Doggone Movie Reviews. I just had a new post for my top 10 of 2016. You can follow me on Instagram at me and my blazer and subscribe on iTunes. Oh, yeah. And if you really want, send me a private message on Facebook and send me friend requests.
Or Grindr.
Do that.
He doesn't have a Grindr. Okay. But anyway, stay tuned for next episode next week. We're going to talk about some great topics here. And in the meantime, I'm Jamie.
I'm Alex.
And this is Not Quite Hollywood. I'm gonna do the Tim. Bye. Cause he does it every episode.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Thanks, Tim. You've started a trend now. I can't stop it. It's in my mind.
Why don't you just give me a gun?
I have a particular set of skills.